Shana Aleph with Shana Bet or with Rebbeim or with Kol guys to learn Musar. And so Rabbi Olshan asked me just to take a few minutes to explain what Musar is. And I wasn't really sure what to do with that. Rabbi Yudin told me that the Ali Shur explains it. So I looked into the Ali Shur and he explains like this. He says anytime a person decides that he wants to do something, so there's two stages to that process. First, he has to form a plan. And once he's formed a plan, then he can go ahead and execute his plan. He can carry it out. For example, if you want to build a building, so we need to have an architect to build the plans, to make the plans, and we need to have a construction worker to build the building. If you want to listen to music, so you need a composer to write the music, and you need a musician to play the music. So Volbe explains that when it comes to Torah, so halachas are how we live. We live by halacha. But in order to execute halacha, in order for us to practice the halacha, so we need to learn Musar. Musar is the way, Musar is the construction worker to the architect, if you will. So what do? We want to keep halacha, and we want to learn Musar, and what does it mean? I'm sure many of you will learn Mesil Shesharim, and Shari Tshuva, and Chovos HaLevavos, and all of the famous Musar Svarim. But what are we supposed to do? We read the book and we've learned Musar? Is that all? So Volbe explains that Musar is learned through Hisboninus. Hisboninus means to not only to introspect, but to be a deep thinker. When I'm learning the Sefer, I need to figure out what it is the Sefer is telling me, and at the same time, I need to think how I can take those ideas and apply them to myself. Classically, I think Musar is associated with Tikkun Amidos, that a person works on self-improvement. The Gra has a Sefer called Evan Shlema, and in the very beginning of the Sefer Evan Shlema, the Gra writes the following. Kol avodas Hashem talui v'tikun amidos, shem kmo levush lamitzvos, v'kol ha-Torah, v'kol ha-chatayim, something. Everything depends on midos, and the Gra says, and even in the next halacha, in the next se'if, he has a very, very strong language, where he says that ikar chiyus ha-adam hu lihischazek tamid b'shviras amidos. That the main work of a person is to constantly struggle with improving his midos, and then he says v'im lav, and if a person chooses not to do that, so lama lo chayim? Why does he have to bother living at all? Very, very strong language. So our job in learning Musar is to really try to internalize, and in order to internalize, really introspect and find out who are we, get in touch with ourselves. What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? Where do I need to improve? And to take the Musar Svarim and allow them to mold us, if you will. So just to make it a little bit more practical, I thought to maybe speak about one midah, which is especially relevant at the beginning of the year of Yeshiva. And that midah is to be Nosei Be'olim Chaveiro. Nosei Be'olim Chaveiro, Chazal tell us, is one of the Menches Kinyanei Torah, that a person shares his friend's burdens together with him. And I think this is really, indicative of the concepts that we're all familiar with. Rabbi Akiva says, "Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha," ze klal gadol b'Torah. And many of us are familiar with the famous story of Hillel and Shammai, where Ger came to Shammai and said, "I want you to teach me the whole Torah. I'll regel achas and I'll convert." And Shammai, he pushed him away with a stick, and he came to Hillel and he said to Hillel, "Teach me the whole Torah on regel achas on one leg." And Hillel said, "Madasoni alach lechavrich losavid v'idach pirusha zilgmor. What you don't like done to you, don't do to other people, and the rest is just mefarshim. Go and learn it." So it's a very lofty idea and ideal to be nosei be'olim chaveiro. And I heard a couple of stories from Rav Yisrael Gantz that I'd like to share with you, which I thought really, really brought home the point. So the first step in order to be nosei ba'ol, the first step in order to share in my friend's burden, is to try a little bit to appreciate what his burden means to him. How is he feeling? I'm sure many of us come here with a whole, you know, the beginning of Shana Aleph, and for sure the Shana Bet guys. Shana Bet guys know at least 40 other people here. Some guys come from schools with, you know, 8 or 9 other kids who they know. And some people come here from the middle of nowhere, no offense, but they don't know anybody. I personally came to Yeshiva Shana Aleph not knowing anybody else. I had acquainted one other person who I ended up rooming with before I came, but I didn't know anybody when I came. I know what it feels like. So I heard this story from Yisrael Gantz in terms of trying to just, you know, feel what it means to feel like being in another person's shoes. Once upon a time, there were two countries that were at war with one another, and the king of one country, for whatever reason, decided that he was going to dress up as a peasant of the other country. He's going to sneak in and just, you know, listen to the locals and see how they talk about the war. Are they afraid? Do they feel like they're winning? You know, just to get an idea of the psychology of the other side. So he dresses up as a peasant, and he sneaks into over the border to the other country, and he's listening. He's sitting in a pub. He's listening to people talk about this and that. He's moving around, you know, mingling. They should hear. And he notices that there's a group of people in the corner that they're pointing to him and they're whispering. And he realizes that he's been found out. Those people recognize that he's the king of the enemy country. So he slips out of the pub, and he sees the group slipping out after him, and he tries to, you know, he rounds the corner, they're rounding the corner, he starts walking a little faster, they're walking a little faster, he starts running, he sees they start running after him. He's jumping through the alley, he doesn't know where he is. And he sees they're behind him, and he turns the corner, and he just sneaks into somebody's house. And he says to the guy, a Jewish guy, listen, these guys are after me, please, anything, I'll give you anything, please, just help me, hide me. So this Jewish guy has all these haystacks in the back of his house, he takes the king out, he stuffs him into a haystack. The band comes, they knock on the door. Yeah, you know, did you see guy running up? No, I don't know. We don't believe you. The group barges into the house, they're looking, turning over the beds, flipping over the tables. They go out to the back, they see the haystacks, they take out their swords and spears, and they start sticking them into the haystacks. Nothing. So they leave. And the guy can't believe it. Oh, wow, what luck. He goes out to the king, takes him out of the haystack. He says, wow, the king's like, thank you so much. You saved my life. I'll give you anything. Gold, jewels, anything you ask. Name it, I'll give it to you. It's yours. This guy's like, what do I need? I have everything I want. I don't want anything. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I did a nice thing. The king insisted, no, name your price. Name it. I'll give you whatever it is. He's like, listen, the one thing I would really like to know is how'd you feel when you were in that haystack and they stuck the sword right in? You know, right by your side, right by your heart, right through your legs. You almost died. What'd it feel like? King's taken aback. What kind of question? He is the king in the end of the day. Chutzpah. So, you know, for that question, I'm going to hang you tomorrow. What? I'm going to hang you tomorrow. You can't speak to me that way. I offer you gold and jewels. You ask me a silly question? Chutzpah! Tomorrow you're going to be hanged. And he leaves. And the next day, lo and behold, a few, you know, soldiers come. They take the guy out. He's already said vidui and kriyashma. They take him to the king's, you know, backyard. They put him up on a chair. The executioner comes with the noose, puts it over his head. The guy, he can't believe his misfortune. And the executioner lifts up his leg. He's about to kick out of the chair. And he says, stop! Let him down. He says, you want to know how I felt yesterday? That's how I felt. The same way you felt just there. Rav Gantz said, that's nosei ba'olim chaveiro. Nosei ba'olim chaveiro, you have to feel. What is it like? What is it like to be in his place? And I'll tell another story now, just because I love this story, even though I save it for my guys later in the year, but I can't hold it in. So I apologize for those of you who have heard it already. But there's a story brought down that I heard once from Rav Asher Weiss. It's brought down by the Shita Mekubetzes in Maseches Menachos. A story about Shlomo HaMelech. And two brothers came to Shlomo HaMelech, and they had a machlokas. They were dividing up their father's inheritance, and they had a machlokas. What was a machlokas? It was a very unique situation, because one of these brothers had two heads, and one of these brothers had only one head. So the two-headed brother said, very reasonably, you know, two heads, two-thirds. And the one-headed brother said, oh, one body, one half. So Machlokas came to Shlomo HaMelech. So, Chacham Mikol Adam, what does Shlomo HaMelech do? He says, we're going to do like this. I'm going to take a bag. We're going to cover one head with a bag. Cover one head with a bag. And we're going to take boiling hot water. He obviously doesn't tell them. Doesn't tell the two-headed brother. We're going to take boiling hot water. We're going to pour it over the exposed head. And the logic is like this. If the cover head screams out in pain when I pour the water, so we know that they feel each other's pain, they're one person. But if the covered head doesn't scream out in pain, he doesn't feel anything from the water, then we know, two people. So I don't know if he screamed or not. Sorry. But Rav Asher Weiss said, this is v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha means I feel his pain. I feel the other person's pain. Just have one last story, and I'll end with another idea here from Rav Gantz. This is a famous story also. I forgot who the Rebbe is. Maybe somebody knows. But there was a Rav in some town in Europe, and it was a bitter, cold winter, a very poor town. And there was one gvir. There was one very wealthy man of the town, and the Rav decided that he's going to go to this wealthy man and ask him to finance firewood for the poor people of the town. Everybody was freezing cold, and he wants this man that he should pay for everybody's firewood. So, he goes to the guy, knocks on the door, the gvir sees the Rav at the door, opens up the door, so excited, Shalom Aleichem, Rebbe, how you doing? He said, good, Baruch Hashem, how are you? So, I'm good, what? He said, how's your business going? Oh, the business is well, the business is good, and they're standing in the doorway, it's the middle of the winter, it's freezing cold, his house is warm, he's got fireplaces all over the place. He starts to get a little cold, he says, Rebbe, why don't you come in? Before he even gets to the end of the sentence out, the Rav starts on this, and how are your children? How's this one doing? How's that one doing? The one in school is doing better? Yeah, good. And he's even more cold than he was before. And he's like, why don't we go? And before it's a, and how's the, how the in-laws, and how are, this thing and the other thing? Keep him outside, he's free, he's shivering, he's trembling. So he finally bursts out, Rebbe, please, it's so cold, let's just come inside, I'll talk to you inside as long as you want. So Rebbe says, no, I kept you out in the cold on purpose. Because I came here to ask you help me to pay for firewood for the poor people who are so cold in the town. And if I come inside, I'm sure you'll give me a nice donation. But you don't know what it feels like to be cold. Now you know what it feels like to be cold. And I'm going to ask you to help me pay for the firewood. No se b'olim chaveiro. I have to feel. What's the other one feeling? Beautiful. So we're all ready to sign up. No se b'olim chaveiro. Hopefully. But just a little bit more incentive, I heard a very nice thing from Rav Gantz. He says, when a person has this midah, when he cares about somebody else, when he troubles himself for somebody else, so you feel good about yourself, I'm sure, that's good, but that's not all you get. Hashem pays you back midah kenegan midah. Where do we see it? The source. So we know when Moshe Rabbeinu was set out onto the Yor, when he was put in a little basket by his mother and sent down the Nile, so his sister Miriam sat and waited, watched to see what's going to be with him, until Bas Paro took him out of the water. And he quoted from Chazal that she stood there for a sha'a kala, for a short hour, and the Vilna Gaon says that means it's a third of an hour. She was there for 20 minutes. 20 minutes Miriam sat to see what was going to happen with Moshe Rabbeinu to make sure he would be okay. And as midah keneged midah, because of that, much later on in life, when Miriam got tzara'as, because of the Lashon Hara that she spoke, all of Bnei Yisrael waited for her for 7 days in the Midbar. Nobody could move. So the girl says, if you could do a little math, I have some guys in my shiur in the afternoon today, I learned they were in AP Calculus, so do a little bit of math. It's like this. 7 days is how many hours? I think I wrote it out over here. 168 hours. Very good. Somebody. 168 hours. Now, she was there for only 20 minutes. A third of an hour. So 168 times 3, 168, because we're going to make it into thirds of an hour, so it comes out to? 504. You don't become a Moreno Rabbeinu for nothing. 504 hours. So because Miriam waited for Moshe Rabbeinu 20 minutes, so everybody else had to wait for her for 504 sets of 20 minutes. So says the Gra, when a person is no save olim chaveiro, when a person cares for somebody else, so Hashem pays him back mida keneged mida, but not one for one. Not one for one. Now, I don't know about how the girl's math worked out, but the way Rav Gan said it, he says one for 500. 504, I don't know. One for 500. 500 times what you gave, you're going to get back. And not only that, said Rav Gan, not only that. You'll get back 500 times what you gave. But Miriam was one person. She waited there for Moshe Rabbeinu to see what happens. Who did she delay? In the end of the day, who did she trouble? Herself. One person. But who had to wait for her? All of Bnei Yisrael. Millions of people had to wait for her. The Anan HaYakovod had to wait for her. The Mishkan had to wait for her. The Aron had to wait. Everything. The world stopped for her. Mida k'neged mida, because she waited 20 minutes for Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabosai, I heard from Nissen Kaplan many times, when you do the right thing, you're never going to lose. You never lose by doing the right thing. A person feels, why should I branch out? You know, this guy and that guy, what do I need? I have my group, we're here. What do I need? Why should I bother myself? He looks a little down, that guy. My business, there's 100 other guys here. Let them say a nice word to him. Let them give him the good morning. So both say, it's not. No se ba'olim chaveiro. And not only is it, it'll feel good for you. Believe me, it'll feel good for you afterwards. It'll feel very good. But mida k'neged mida, you're not going to get back one hello. You're going to get back times 500, says the girl. And you're not going to get back times 500 of one person. All of Bnei Yisrael stop for you. Everybody's no sibul. This is like the famous word, and with this I'll finish, from the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov says that Hashem tzilcha yad v'inecha, the Pasuk tells us, that Hashem is like the shadow on our right side. So what does it mean, Hashem tzilcha yad v'inecha? Where's the shadow? That's what my kids were asking me, where the shadow goes, Hashem tzilcha yad v'inecha. So the Baal Shem Tov said this refers to Hashem's relationship with us, which functions in a way of mida k'neged mida. When I act in one way, so Hashem is like my shadow. Hashem will act in the exact same way towards me. And believe me, if we say, I'm mekabel myself, this is a very difficult time for a lot of people. I'll go the extra mile. I'll put in the extra effort to make somebody else feel a little bit more comfortable, to make somebody else a little bit happier. To put in to smile at somebody, to say good morning to somebody, to give somebody a pat on the back. So Hashem tzilcha yad v'inecha. There's going to be a mida k'neged mida, and the Gra promises 500 times over. So Mirtz Hashem Rabosai, it should be the start of a very good zman. I'm looking forward to getting to know everybody. On Sunday, we will start the regular Musar Seder with Chavrusas. And if I could just take a few minutes now to tell you what the rest of the plan for tonight is. We're going to now hear from Rav Benny Eisner, Shlita. Rav Benny, today is the Yurtzeit from Rav Cook. Rav Benny is a Talmud of Rav Yehuda Cook. So we're going to hear from him about Rav Tzvi Yehuda, Rav Avraham Yitzchak. After Rav Benny finishes, we're going to break up into our night seder chaburas, the regular night seder shurim that we're going to have every night from approximately 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. There'll be a list on the bulletin board of where whose shir you're in. Somehow, before you actually go there, we'll communicate to you what room you're supposed to go to. I'm not sure how yet, but we'll figure it out. After that, at 10 o'clock, Rabbi Willig is going to come, not Rav Moshe Willig from this morning, but his brother of Avram Willig is going to come and give a parsha shir. He's always one of the highlights of the week. Very energetic, funny, enjoyable, geshmak parsha shir. So that'll be at 10 o'clock. And then after that, we're going to have some food and refreshments, and it's always going to be geshmak. So without further ado.